I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
The championship season is over, and what a season it was.
But the best is yet to come. It's the playoffs.
Who will make it to the Premier League?
And who will be left heartbroken at Wembley?
Stay across it all with the second tier.
We're bringing you episodes after every leg.
And in between, we're revisiting the greatest moments in playoff history.
It's real conversation with two real championship obsessives.
So you can be in the know about everything happening in the playoffs.
And share all your new knowledge in the pub with your mates.
So come join us.
We're your one-stop shop for the playoffs.
Search second tier in your podcast app
and hit subscribe.
Just an urchin living under the street, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Bournemouth got a famous win and Aston Villa are on the march. It's Monday, 11th of December. I'm Marcus Speller.
Oh, fucking hell. I forgot my name. I literally forgot my own name. I was looking at Andy.
And I'm Andy Brassel.
I wish I was Andy Brassel.
All right.
I was looking at Andy, thinking about his hoodie, and thinking, oh, yeah, and I just went, Andy.
It's clearly Monday. It's
sorry.
Luke, it's not Freaky Friday.
It's not.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Football Weekly. Just an urchin living under the street, everybody. Welcome to the Football Ramble. Bournemouth got a famous win and Aston Villa are on the march. It's Monday, 11th of December. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Andy Brassel.
How you doing, everybody? Good to have you with us. It's the Football Ramble in your ears. Big Brass and the magnificent Morsey. Oh, just there a thrilling go. Three.
Yeah.
Yes.
It is a three musketeers.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Big Brass. You're happy with that, Brass?
I'll take that.
Big Brass.
You'll take it all the way to the bank, won't you?
Yeah. I will.
Yeah, we won't talk about what Brass is slang for. Some other people, don't look at me like that, Marcus. Some other people may talk about that. I'm saying we're not going to do that.
We will if you pay me.
No way.
Unbelievable.
You're already getting paid to be here.
Right, okay.
And listen, while we're on it, too much in my opinion. But it's not just up to me. So carry on.
You negotiated the deal.
You are very much the Georges Mensch of the Football Ramble.
I am.
Dear. Andy Brassel. There was a lot of great football and a lot of great things that happened on the weekend, and surely we must have some highlights.
I think
to start with your highlight of the weekend.
Maybe it's because I've got Mensch on the mind, or maybe it's because I want to do something European just to irritate Luke Aaron Moore.
Yeah, I always everything you put in the WhatsApp group about European football, I just forward to the OTC WhatsApp group, which I'm already a part of.
I like Andy's, I wouldn't say insistence, because that suggests that you're doing something, you know, a little bit...
Naughty? Wrong.
A bit naughty would be the right word.
Disgraceful?
I like how you pronounce the Portuguese names as they are.
Mensch.
Yeah, because obviously, you know, the fools like Luke and I and the rest of the population would say George Mendes, because it just sounds a bit stupid if we say it, but you have the gravitas.
And the language skills.
And the language skills.
Okay.
To say it's like Bruno Fernandes. If I go on Bruno Fernandes.
Yeah, it sounds a bit out of the place, doesn't it?
Yeah. But I'm just glad you're there. You're there.
What he's saying is
fighting
you
the good fight.
You don't know anything about football, but you can pronounce the names right.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. So carry on.
Right.
Well, I'm going to go to Rome, I think, for last night's Roma-Fiorentina match.
I think you mean Roma, Andy.
And by the way, when you say Fiorentina, do you mean Florence?
Yeah. Firenze.
Yeah, Florenzi, exactly. There we go. I think that was the first city in Italy to have its own Magnum ice cream superstore.
There you go.
Oh, there you are.
You know where you could design your own Magnum?
We're not paying you enough. I've changed my mind. We're not paying you enough, mate.
Tell us more about what happens in Italia, Andy.
Well, obviously...
Can you not do this the whole show?
I'm done.
Okay, good.
Obviously, when it's Jose Mourinho and it's a Sunday night, you can fill in the blanks, can't you?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So... Dybala sets one up for Lukaku early on, and then in a couple of minutes, it all goes to hell in a handcart. Roma get one sent off, Nikola Zalewski.
Yeah.
Fiorentina equalised straight away. Romelu Lukaku is later sent off for what I can only describe as an absolute criminal foul.
Shocker.
Which he has the gall to complain
it
about.
Ripped the sock of the opposing player.
Yeah, that's right, Christian Kouame.
Christian Romero's looking at that going, that's a bit of me, that.
I'm going to have to put a bit of muscle on so my challenges feel like that.
No VAR needed there.
Like Vincenzo Italiano, the Fiorentina coach, was absolutely losing his shit. Well. Mourinho was about to get involved, and he looked at it and he thought, actually, you've got this, Vincenzo. And so what he did is he got a piece of paper. It was real back of a fag packet sort of tactics.
Yeah.
And he drew with a Venn diagram how they should mark up at corners. Of course, none of the Roma staff were allowed to go behind the goal. So he tore it in half and what did he do? Gave it to a ball boy. He loves a bit of child labour, does Joe?
Yeah.
He's still doing it. He's still doing
his
thing.
Didn't talk to the media after the game, did he?
No, he didn't.
No.
He did it last week in Portuguese just to be bloody awkward.
You were loving that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He means George Mendes, everybody.
Yeah.
Oh, dear. Yeah. Well, what a great start to the show.
Yeah, and for more of European chat, people can tune into OTC on the continent in their podcast app every Thursday and Friday, right? Look, if you just want to say, keep your foreign muck over there, you can do.
I think I've said it enough.
Oh, his voting record would suggest. Luke Moore,
that's naughty by you. You don't like it when I do that to you. And you genuinely are.
Really?
My highlight.
Oh dear.
My highlight is coming out. It's coming out straight out of Goodison Park.
Yeah. Okay.
Straight out of motherfucking Goodison Park.
Yeah.
As they say up that part of the world. Everton beat Chelsea 2-0. Mauricio Pochettino's response afterwards was basically on the lines of like, and the interview went. He started off by saying, "Yeah, I think we're missing something," and I thought. Are we going down this? We are going down this road.
Yeah.
Oh, you need more players.
Yeah.
And I understand he's speaking English as a second language, so I understand. Totally understand that. But the way he said it was so funny. Like he obviously just said he knows that we all know how many players they've bought.
Yeah.
But he still wants players.
Yeah, so he
won't just say we need players because he knows he's going to get a ridiculous response to that. So he says we somehow need to improve our reality.
That's great. Very good.
But he basically is saying. Yeah. Despite the fact they spent £400 million this summer, they go up to Goodison, you get beat quite easily, you're labelled a prat, and you want more money.
And he's wearing his little cap as well.
It was, he did have his little cap. I didn't mind the cap.
I
thought he looked a bit like someone outside the Trocadero in Piccadilly Circus giving out flyers.
Yeah, a little bit like that. To paraphrase the Libertines, there's fewer more distressing sights than that of an Argentinian.
That is a paraphrase. And I think when I say that about him handing out flyers outside the Trocadero, he might actually do that in January just to try and find players.
Do you think he's forgotten that they've signed Christopher Nkunku? Because I do.
Mm.
I think it's very difficult to remember the 15 players that you've signed since you've been there.
Yeah.
And that's fine. If I said to you, Alex Ferguson signed 15 players at Man United, fine. He was there 20 odd years.
Yeah.
Pochettino signed 15 already.
Yeah, incredible.
Yeah.
My highlight of the weekend, other than, you know, Harry Wilson's goal, was...
Oh, what a beauty. We'll what a game that. He had, by the way. Oh,
we'll talk about that in a bit. But I actually loved the winner at Goodison Park.
Which was
a beautiful goal. The young lad's first in the Premier League, and the great celebrations. But it wasn't. It was Sean Dyche's comments after that.
Yeah.
I loved it. It was authentic. We're authentic at this club. None of that dancing nonsense.
The thing is, Mark,
you went quite posh then for Dyche.
I did. Yeah. I need
it's
a
like practice. Nick Hewer. He's a bit of Nick Hewer from Countdown.
It was a great last minute winner.
But he's always over northernified. Isn't
yeah.
he?
Yeah,
he's not recognised that he's a Midlander, is
he? Sam Allardyce is the same.
Yes.
Sam Allardyce from Dudley. Everyone thinks he's really northern.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
To me, from Portsmouth, he is. But if I could just say, I mean, it's amazing when a young player is able to do that in front of their own fans against a big team in an important game.
And not mess up the celebration.
And the celebration is there for everyone to see.
Yes.
Good for him.
Gentlemen, we must start the proper Premier League roundup, if you like, with...
Oh, that's a bit of a dig to the great...
No, the highlights of the weekend. It included Jose Mourinho and Roma.
So it's a promotion for Everton, really.
I'd say
into the highlights.
Yeah, exactly. Manchester United 0, AFC Bournemouth 3. Manchester United have lost 11 games in all competitions this season. They've now lost more Premier League games in the decade since Sir Alex Ferguson retired than in his entire 26 years at the club. November's Premier League Manager of the Month, Erik ten Hag, said post-match, as a squad, we are not good enough to be consistent.
Yeah, and so... Shout out to all these statisticians who are sitting on that fact for weeks and weeks. As people say on the WhatsApp group over the weekend, they couldn't believe they got to press the button on that.
It was always going to happen.
It was going to happen at some point.
Yeah. It's a bit like Jurgen Klopp carting around his Salah 200 shirt, isn't it?
Very much. When Ian Wright his,
did it, went too early though, didn't he, Ian Wright?
And then
he
scored
did,
again
yeah,
in the same
yeah,
game.
He did.
Which is an amazing fact.
Yes.
It is interesting, the situation at United. Obviously, Vish has talked about it. Well, you know. I guess he could say he's cathartically.
I bet he wishes he was here today.
I don't think so.
No.
In a series of 3 a.m. WhatsApp voice notes.
I think Fish is in Dundee in his bare feet at the moment.
A lovely reference.
Yeah.
I mean, this was a stunning victory for Bournemouth, and a lot of people were saying, you know, look at what Iraola's doing at Bournemouth. They've got a plan. They've got a system. You can see it. The identity, all that kind of good stuff. And Manchester United looked all over the place. I think we should focus a bit on Bournemouth because we focused a lot on Manchester United, and no doubt we will come back to them because from their point of view, it was a bit of a shite show. But Bournemouth, their fourth win in five. Solanke got another goal, Billing among the scorers as well. But what Iraola's been doing there, Andy, it's coming to fruition now, quite clearly. We look at the results, look at the performance.
Iraola was really close to getting the boot as well.
Yeah.
I mean, he was probably a result off.
Yeah.
So for him to maintain his vision throughout that sort of pressure, and it was a degree of pressure because, you know, you can say, oh, Bournemouth have got a small ground and, you know, it's not the same level as Manchester United. They're an incredibly well-funded Premier League club, and there is pressure there, more pressure than there ever was, because if you go back over the last 5 years, I think Premier League boards have got more and more trigger happy because the financial implications of getting relegated now is absolutely ruinous or extremely damaging at best, I suppose you could say. So the whole reason he was brought in is because he was a philosophy manager. I always felt he was kind of a get for Bournemouth, but now it's coming together. But I think when you talk about a philosophy style of coach, you don't think about the industry off the ball.
No.
And that's what was really obvious in this. And that was platformed to a sort of wider audience here. And you could see the quality of some of the players they brought in as well. Like Kerkez, for example, was excellent. He was really good for AZ in the conference.
And we know
that
there's a player in Solanke. You know,
I didn't know there was this player in Solanke. I thought there's someone who could maybe get you 6-7 Premier League goals in the season. I didn't see this Solanke emerging.
Yeah, I mean, he's been great. And it's funny what you say with regards to the board and the money involved in the game now. Which, I mean, it's been there for a while and whatnot. And it's a tricky one for the board because if the manager looks like he's going nowhere, do you then keep him going? And you just think, now it's a bit late and it's now going to take somebody longer to turn the ship around.
Are we talking Iraola or are we talking Ten Hag?
Yeah, Iraola particularly.
But the situation with Iraola was just that they really, it was almost from the decision makers at Bournemouth, it had to be a selfish decision to keep him because of the way they treated Gary O'Neill.
Yeah.
They couldn't
they could
have staked so much on getting him.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And so they,
yeah,
it, they took a situation where, and I know I'm biased towards Gary O'Neill, but I don't think that's relevant to this particular point. They take Gary O'Neill, who does fine there. He's done a pretty good job. Yeah. I mean, he delivered what they asked him to deliver effectively. Then they fired him anyway to bring their own man in. If you get, I mean, they're 16 games in now. So when you're talking about him being a game or so ago, they probably about 5 or 6 games ago. Mm. So you then go 10 or 11 games into a new Premier League season. Mm. You go, well, we're going to get rid of him as well. It makes you look ridiculous. So they had,
so out of respect for Gary O'Neill, they didn't sack him.
Well, maybe.
Which is a touch of class. Well,
and also, I think there's an element of Areola. There's a lot of people who know a lot more about tactics than I do. They seem to see a lot in what Bournemouth were doing. It was just they weren't getting the results. Mm. And now they are getting the results. They've gone 5 without losing a game. And they've gone up to Old Trafford and dominated. I mean, they probably should have won 5-0.
Well, this is the thing.
Which is incredible.
They definitely should have won 4-0.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean,
yeah.
that is where you just tear your hair out with the new interpretation of the handball rule.
Yeah.
You just think, how on earth have you given that? You know, I don't want to get bogged down, but it should have been at least 4-0, as you say. And this is not a smash and grab, which is kind of what you were saying, Luke. This was a polished performance. There was moments where Man United might have scored, but I mean, come on, you know, that's going to happen.
And I think, you know, I know you didn't want to go too heavy on Man United, but just if I can make a brief point, because I think Bournemouth are really good. But I also think, you know, and this may annoy Bournemouth fans, me saying this, I don't really think they had to be that good.
Yeah.
And that's to me gets to the nub of the idea about you can say with a Premier League Manager of the Month award for Ten Hag or for anyone, it's just about results. Effectively, if you are going to go Premier League Manager of the Month is about results, then in November you give it to Arteta because he got more points.
Yeah.
But you don't, it doesn't really have to be such a big deal because it's not really a massive thing anyway. But
when's Marco Silva getting one?
But well, maybe December.
Yeah, could be.
Start a new year off right. but here's the thing. If you're not doing it just on points, you've got to look at that team and you've got to make some kind of subjective assessment about them. Mm. And you cannot say that a team that's capable, and I know we're in December now, so it's a slightly different point, that a team that's capable of turning in performances like that and other performances we've seen is any kind of coherent unit that is run by a manager who's in control of what he's doing.
Yeah.
Because what we saw at the weekend was from United, it's just shambolic.
Yeah.
What they're in a habit at the moment of when they lose, and they do lose a lot for a team of their size, they lose so badly.
That is definitely...
It looks so bad on the eye. It looks terrible.
Well, people are throwing the towel in and people having to go at Bruno Fernandes or Fernandes, should Andy say. But
yeah. Andy, do get that right.
So the point now is that a few weeks ago, when these, you know, they'd had a few shocking results and whatnot over the season, but they were still in an all right position, which you could argue they still are. The chat of sacking Ten Hag was kind of like, oh, that would be stupid to sack him. I don't think that's going to happen. They got Bayern Munich this week in the Champions League.
And then Liverpool.
Yeah. And then Liverpool. It would be very... post-Ferguson Manchester United to win one of those games with a bit of luck. Do you know what I mean?
Yes.
It would be very post-Ferguson.
I do know what you mean.
To kind of
it's
squirm
not down to them,
through.
Though, is it? It's not down to them in the Champions League, is it?
No, to squirm through somehow or maybe get a good win against Liverpool or something.
They ain't going to win at Anfield, are they?
Well.
Come on.
You know.
Did they get whipped 7-0 last year?
So my point, or my question is, are we close now to seeing Ten Hag get the sack?
No, because there's no one to sack him.
Right.
So my feeling would be that it's in such a state of flux that, and there's such a big concern in terms of who they are as a team and size of the club, that, you know, if you've got a situation where, in this case, Sir Jim Ratcliffe's coming in with Ineos and he's going to looks like it's been reported, he's going to take control of the football matters.
Which is insane, by the way,
it
for
is.
Someone who's going to own 25%
is,
of the stock, only 25% of the
stock. We covered that, though, and that's absolutely right. But it doesn't make any sense to fire the manager. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can't, unless there's some kind of agreement that, oh, by the way, when I'm coming in and I'm taking control of the football side of the club, I'm going to fire Ten Hag.
Unless
so you fire him
unless
now.
You know when exactly the takeover's happening.
Yeah.
Which we don't as outsiders at the moment. Mm-hmm. Because if you've got to do like 6 games or 8 games with a caretaker coach, maybe that makes a bad situation even worse. But I was saying on here on OTC a while ago, if there's something that was going to make a club that believes quite strongly at board level in an action, if there was something that was going to jolt them into action, it would be not getting out of that Champions League group. Mm-hmm. But then again, in a normal functional, halfway functional Manchester United, this result pushes you over the edge, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, for sure. I mean, Andy Mitten did a top 10 on The Athletic of the worst Man United results post-Ferguson.
This one will be in there.
It was in there. It was like number 5 or something.
Right.
Yeah. So it's hard to see how, you know, if we're in normal times, how, you know, realistically you come back from that. I mean, I know it happens gradually, and I know that it's difficult to compare to the Ferguson era, which is probably what dogs managers since every single week of their lives, particularly in the media. But it's hard, I mean, it's just impossible to imagine that ever happening.
Mm.
You know.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Of course, 3 places above them in the league and 8 points better off than them is Aston Villa.
Mm.
And Villa got another good win at home, this time against Arsenal, 1-0. Of course, the result leaves Villa just 2 points off the top of the league. And when asked if Villa are in the title race, Emi Martinez, among other things, says, yeah, I'm a believer, mate.
But John McGinn said no, didn't he? John McGinn said, don't tell me, we're not talking about that. We banned it or something.
Very different characters.
The way that... Chips.
The way that Emi Martinez said that, is that evidence of the influence of Ange Postecoglou on the Premier League this season?
Possibly. Yeah. But he did say, though, Martinez, that Emery said, you know, if we win against Manchester City and against Arsenal, then we've got to take ourselves seriously as the start of contention.
And I agree with that.
Which is clearly what he said to the team in the dressing room and not the media, whereas Emi Martinez can't help himself. And I think John McGinn's, you know, toeing the company line kind of thing. But it's another great win. And beating Manchester City in what was an incredible performance, a very mature performance, against Arsenal, yeah, okay, another day Odegaard puts at least one of those in. But they score early and they end up winning the game. I mean, how did you see this performance from Aston Villa?
I think that's what makes it so impressive, Marcus, that it's almost like a performance from a completely different team.
Yeah.
Now, if I was, you know, we were talking on Friday and I was saying how a lot of the football that Villa have played this season has been quite un-Emery-like.
Yes.
This was very Emery-like.
Yeah.
It was.
This was way, way different. And that they can switch it up and beat the two best teams in the division, with all due respect to Liverpool, they can beat the two best teams in the division in the space of a week with totally different performances.
Yeah.
I mean, that is something that suggests that they're going to be durable, that they can beat you and they can beat the best opposition in very different ways.
Yeah, and the un-Emery-like thing that you've mentioned a couple of times as well, and Miguel Delaney wrote an excellent piece about this, is how high up the pitch Villa have been playing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's been a number of people saying, hang on, we didn't see this coming. For a manager so long in the tooth like Emery, to almost change that philosophy, or not, maybe not change the philosophy, but change the style so dramatically.
It's like Ancelotti-esque, isn't it?
Yeah, it's very rare.
Yeah.
To see that.
Yeah, the managerial greats of the game normally have something that works for them that they always go back to.
Mm.
So to be a genuine student of the game and change as you go along, even when you're in your 50s, that's pretty remarkable.
It's
even more impressive.
Well, it's Ferguson-esque as well.
Yeah. They're better at it than any other team in the league, that particular high line. And the stats play that out. Sky Sports made a big deal out of that over the weekend, talking about how many times they've caught team players offside and stuff. But it's also a sign of a really confident team because ultimately the offside trap, playing it in that way, if you're not a confident player and you're not confident in your own positional ability and your own recovery pace, it's the kind of goal that players don't like conceding because it just makes them look stupid. Like you just look stupid if you get that offside trap sprung over and over again. You look incompetent, and it's the easiest and the most comforting thing to do, to just drop deeper and deeper and deeper as the game goes on, particularly when you get a bit tired.
The discipline it takes.
Their line is, it's the best Premier League back line in terms of discipline and positional I've seen for ages.
Yeah.
Like, it's so on point the whole time. The amount of times clever players, like top level players like Bukayo Saka, like get caught.
Yeah.
Is really indicative of an amazingly well-drilled, well-drilled, well-coached team.
Yeah.
And you've also got to say it, and Marcus, you won't thank me for saying this, but I'm going to say it anyway. It makes you think, what was Steven Gerrard doing with this team? Because they haven't bought that many players.
Why would I?
Because you love England and you love one of their brave lions.
Oh, I see.
And I can tell by your face that it's got to you. And therefore, I have no further things to say.
Yeah,
but it is, you think you look at like Gerrard getting the bullet because
he's looking like they might float with relegation with this team.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
And now we're legitimately sitting here talking about them challenging for the title.
Yeah, Leicester City-esque.
It is.
They've got exactly the same amount of points after this amount of games as Leicester did in their title season, yeah, don't they?
But also, I want to just completely agree with what you guys have alluded to, which is the idea that the way they won against Arsenal was completely different to the way they won against City.
Which is Andy was...
Yeah, yeah. Partly because it had to be. But also because it's even more impressive because Arsenal present a completely different challenge to Man City.
Yeah, yeah. And like I say, look, the Villa got a little bit lucky. Odegaard misses two very good chances.
Yeah.
You know, and we should give Emi Martinez...
They rode their luck, for sure.
Emi Martinez kudos because the way he anticipated the Odegaard one, you know, he pounced on it. He'd saved it before the shot had even been taken, really.
He definitely anticipated it brilliantly well.
He did, yeah. And so there is that. And that, so therefore, it was a little bit different because against Man City, they gave them nothing. But McGinn's goal, if you haven't seen this on social media, I know people will have seen the highlights. I watched the highlights of this game. I watched the game and I watched the highlights of it. And I actually didn't fully appreciate how good the goal was until I saw a video of it posted on Twitter.
The one from the top.
Whichever angle, there was a number of angles. Just the passing move. Now, sometimes, it was a 25-30 pass move. Maybe it was like 17, 18 passes, which is still impressive. But the fact is how quickly they move. And if you know what I mean by this, the different types of passes within the move. It wasn't just short and sharp passes. It's how be as effective as you can with the ball. And the way they moved it, and it comes into McGinn and he slots home, that's against Arsenal. And Arsenal love to do that against teams. So it was magnificent football.
I also thought that Watkins got through a lot of quite selfless work. He doubled up quite a lot over on the left to kind of negate Saka and Odegaard. What I would say though is you talk about Aston Villa riding their luck. You could also say really, but who for Arsenal actually played that well? You know, Saka was kind of kept pretty quiet, thinking he had one shot on target. Odegaard got chances, fine, but he missed those chances. I thought Kai Havertz was probably the pick of the midfield players, and that's, you know, he seems to be in some kind of resurgent form. But ultimately, it's one of those ones where what about Martinelli? Well, he got subbed off.
Yeah.
Jesus, he was busy as you always, but he got subbed off. Like they did ride their luck, and Arsenal had more shots and more chances than Villa, and more of the ball.
I mean, Havertz's goal, I felt, should have stood. By the way.
What, because
it couldn't? It is hard.
No, but the Villa. Didn't it hit the Villa player's hand first, though, is what people were saying.
In the spirit of what I was saying about Bournemouth's fourth goal, you know, I think he's incredibly unlucky, but okay.
If you're being consistent, I suppose you have to say that because I said that earlier.
Yeah, exactly.
All I'm saying is that maybe Arsenal did have more of the ball and maybe, you know, they were unfortunate, but maybe Aston Villa were comfortable with that. Maybe given Aston Villa's record this season, maybe they're fine with that.
I have to say, I don't think from an Arsenal perspective you would change that much about their performance.
No.
I thought they performed pretty well on another day they win that game.
But with regards to what you said earlier, Andy, you know, Villa did what they had to do.
Yeah.
And again, with this Emery side, they go 1-0 up, so then that influences and informs how they play. Because against Manchester City, they scored much later on in the game.
And they expended an enormous amount of energy in that game as well.
Which made this even more impressive. There's only a few days later.
So if Arsenal do, you know, get the penalty for the foul on, or the alleged foul on Gabriel Jesus, and they score.
Douglas Luiz booted him up in the air. But
they got away with that one. Let's be honest. So they did get some decisions here, Havertz's goal stood, whatever. I do think Villa could then go, right, let's go again. You know, and I think that's it. It's not just a backs to the walls job. It was a different type of performance, as we know.
But they've got depth, which sometimes is not celebrated.
Yeah.
I mean, the fact that, you know, they bought Diaby for a fortune in the summer,
and he's fucking brilliant.
He is brilliant, and he doesn't start because Leon Bailey's playing so well at the moment. And I tell you what, if there's a testament to Emery's coaching, Leon Bailey is it, because Leon Bailey was your ultimate YouTube highlights player. And he is consistently getting a tune out of him in a way that a lot of people who watch him on a regular basis, I don't think really believe was possible.
And it's a difference between a coach at the moment and this moment here, the difference between Emery and Pochettino. You know, what's wrong with coach? What's wrong with better coaching the players you've already got?
Yeah.
Emery does that as well. And that's what something that Guardiola has always done very successfully as well.
I think it'd just be fascinating to see how far Villa can go with this.
They get through Christmas.
Yeah.
They've got some games which you think, I'm not sure. But you wouldn't have expected to beat City and Arsenal in the same week.
Yeah.
So they get through Christmas. I think it's a really interesting situation.
It is. And with regards to the energy expended, you know, and we know they've got European football as well. We said it before a ball was kicked. We expect them to win that tournament.
I mean, it's quite untaxing, European football still, until you get to the sharp end,
listen,
I would suggest.
Well, and the travel potential Bernanski in the shape of Zrinski Mostar, whose budget is probably
Ollie Watkins' wages.
Kidderminster Harriers sort of level.
His budget is probably about the size of fucking, you know, I don't know, yeah. It's low.
It's low. It's very, very low.
Insert your own witty joke that I couldn't think of right there about how low their budget is compared to us. Probably Gosport Borough, yeah.
Yeah, and that's just the council. God bless them. Yeah. All right, let's go for a quick break.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This episode of the Football Ramble is sponsored by BetterHelp. Life throws many different challenges at us, and as a result, we all have our own sources of stress. Whether big or small, those stresses can impact our lives in unpredictable ways, and if we don't address them, they can have an outsized and unwanted impact. Therapy is a safe place in which we can address these issues, learn to understand them, and find ways to work through them. Having therapy can be beneficial to anybody, not just people who've experienced major traumas, even if you may have not considered it before. It could be simply a time for you to get things off your chest, a way to learn positive coping skills, or how to set boundaries. Ultimately, it can be whatever you need it to be. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you have to do is fill out a brief questionnaire and BetterHelp will match you to a licensed therapist. You can even switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
You know, everything was a challenge. I'd eat an apple in the, you know, watching the TV at night, right. And the bin would be by the TV, you know, 6 meters away or whatever it was. And well, I would just do it. I had the bravery to miss, and for the to be a stain on the wallpaper, and my mum to absolutely scream at me. But the next day, I'd do the same, and I'd be bump, and it'd go right in the middle, and my dad would give me a nod of approval, and my mum would be seething but couldn't say anything because it went in.
I wish I was brave enough to
mess up
my
wallpaper. Yeah. Listen, I'll tell you what.
Been brave enough to move the bin.
There's some people in this. There's some people on this show who've stained their parents' wallpaper over time. Trust me on that.
All right, they're not here to defend themselves. So we can't talk
Pete
about.
Pete's not here. I heard.
We should say thank you very much to friend of the Ramble, William Ray, for choosing that clip. Of course, you can become a friend of the Ramble too by heading over to patreon.com/footballramble.
Yeah. It's demented, isn't it? Whichever way you look at it.
What, being a friend of the Ramble?
No, that's correct. Okay. That's a must-have. That is this Christmas must-have gift. Do we have a gift? Is there a gift facility in Patreon? There must be. Gift it to your friend for Christmas.
Yeah, I think Pete can come around and mess your wallpaper up. Yeah. With a bodily fluid of your choice.
What I like about that clip is that's from Simon Jordan's up. You get to choose. That's a fucking great consolation. Now,
Pete, this will test you.
Yeah. your wife comes home. What's happened there? I chose to piss myself. It could have been worse. You should see next doors. Covered in cum. Right. What I like about the Michael Owen clip, can I just say, is that that's on Simon Jordan's podcast Up Front.
Oh yeah.
Which is not the upfront we have. They chose the same name. Don't know why. He's told that story, Michael Owen. Mm. Simon Jordan's accepted it.
Yeah, oh yeah.
There's probably someone filming it. Mm. There's someone producing it. Yeah. There's someone editing it.
Yeah.
Probably about five people.
That's right.
Have all thought that's fine.
Yeah.
Not only is that fine, we're clipping that out for social media.
That's it.
And no one will think it's weird.
No.
It's the weirdest thing of the year. It's coming late, December, but it's the weirdest thing. And crucially, it's not the weirdest thing Michael Owen said.
No, the thing is he could have framed it in a totally different way, that I was always competitive. I was always wanted to achieve stuff. But then to talk about being brave, it's just, I had the bravery.
You could put that on Children in Need, couldn't you?
You could.
Yeah. It was part of the big montage. I threw an apple in a bin.
Oh.
I had the bravery to stain me mum's wallpaper
this
with
Christmas,
apple juice.
This Christmas, be as brave as Michael Owen.
Yeah. If he had anything about him, the next time he does an interview on Zoom at home on the telly,
he'd
just put an apple smear behind him on the wallpaper. Apple seed there.
He was a great player for England, though. Right, it's now time for
an
update.
So he can do whatever he wants, apparently. He can now do whatever he wants.
It's the...
run Villa into the ground.
You're like a diplomat, you know, in a foreign land. Right, it's time for an update on the Football Ramble Acca with Betfair. Every weekend we're placing a £10 Acca on four match odds, 90 markets across the Premier League, where any winning bets are paid out in 90 minutes, so you don't need to worry about any stoppage time drama ruining your bet. Game one, of course, I picked Fulham to beat West Ham. Luke rolled his eyes when I first said that.
It was a good pick.
But it turned out to be an excellent pick. Fulham won 5-0, of course. Game two, Andy picked Liverpool to beat Palace. They won 2-1, did the Reds. Elliot scored in the 91st minute. So if Andy had bet on a draw, we would have still been okay. Mm. It would have paid out thanks to Betfair's match odds 90 markets. But of course, Andy was correct, though. Liverpool did win that match. Game three, Luke picked Aston Villa to beat Arsenal, and they won 1-0.
I thought that was a brave pick, and I don't think I got the credit for that.
Well, you are. Well,
fortunately, you're giving yourself the credit for that.
Well, sarcastic well done from Marcus, and you having a go at me. Cheers. Fucking hell.
And then game four, Pete picked Newcastle Spurs to draw, but Spurs won 4-1.
Yeah.
3 out of 4, though, for 2 weeks in a row. We're going in the right direction.
After about 40 seconds of that watching that Spurs Newcastle game, I was like, it's not me a draw.
It's
this.
Not happening.
No way.
I know. And it all went down to the last game of the weekend as well. What a shame. So in total, there were 3 stoppage time goals in the Premier League this weekend. Betfair are donating £10 to the charity pot for every stoppage time goal in the Premier League this season. That's another £30 for Prostate Cancer UK. Remember, with Betfair this season, when you place a bet on their match odds 90 markets, you will still get your winning bet paid out in full at 90 minutes.
Yeah, we were close, but no cigar. Listen, it's an improvement to the 3 people in this room's tally. Isn't it? We've got another one right each.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something.
That's something.
It? Because the person who gets the least amount right by the end of the season has to do a forfeit.
Yes.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Particularly if it's you.
I was about to say, there's news to us all. But at the moment, I'm up for it.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about that game then. Tottenham Hotspur 4, Newcastle United 1, the injury derby. Tottenham won for the first time since the end of October, ending a run of 5 games without a win.
Yeah, Kieran Trippier looks like he needs to be taken around the back of the vets and someone to slot him.
Oh, don't have a go at Trippier.
I don't think it's his fault. I think
it was his fault.
He's been running to the ground. It is his fault. Mm. He's being picked and he's deciding to play. But I feel like as club captain, he feels like he has to do it.
Well,
but there's no justification off the back of this result that Eddie Howe, despite his issues with selection and availability, he needs to bring someone in. He's brought Lewis Miley into midfield.
Yeah.
Lewis Hall's been sitting on the bench for the last, four or five games?
He needs to give some of these, particularly that back line, they need a break.
I'm concerned. Yeah, look, Kieran Trippier is one of the finest defenders in the Premier League right now.
Yes.
I'd go as far as to say maybe one of the finest fullbacks in the world. Do you know what I mean? Like, we rate him, we love him. But the
load on him at the moment is unbearable.
You saw what happened to Everton, and you saw, I mean, look, he's playing against, you know, like Son skinned him a couple of times, but that's Son, who was at his scintillating best.
Okay? He was great.
So he might do that on a normal day.
It did feel as if Postecoglou, I mean, it feels like other teams are starting to work Newcastle out in terms of Postecoglou seemed to put Son, you know, he drifts inside quite a lot. It was almost as if, stay out there and have a go at him.
Yeah.
He's cooked.
And I'm just concerned. Yeah, I'm concerned about Newcastle with their game against Milan, because that needs to be all pumping, all guns blazing.
Having said that, the atmosphere will lift them. Happen in those 2 games. I know that's a bit of a cliche, but as well, Milan are rot at the moment.
Yeah, they are, Andy. And I just wonder, in particular, that Everton game, if they could have just played They could have rested a few.
I think
it's an experience from Howe and Tindall.
Yeah.
I just think it's inexperience. I think, you know, you look at the situation you've got to go into over December when you're an English Premier League club, well, your team in the top flight in England. Yeah. Like, it's not the same as in the rest of Europe. It's fucking intense. Like, we're the only country of major league, I think, Andy will tell me if I'm wrong, where we got ramp up the games over winter.
Yeah.
Well, there is a sort of, they've got their sort of staggered fixtures come January, which is sort of the Premier League break. It's not a break like you see in other countries, but they do kind of, they are bringing in that staggering of the fixtures to ease the burden.
A sort of winter break by stealth almost.
It's an easing of the burden rather than a break.
But since the start of November, Newcastle have already played 9 games.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not going to let up. I've got it in front of me here. They've got 4 games in the next kind of 12 days. So he knows what's coming. You can understand if a team loses at Spurs, even though they've been in poor form, and even loses, against Everton, a resurgent Everton at Goodison Park. You can understand that. But I think it's the manner of these defeats. Any common or garden football fan can see that how many players they've got that are totally cooked. And I think the other thing about it is, you get whopped at Spurs. It could have been more. I mean, Brennan Johnson hit the woodwork twice. Yeah, it could have been more, right? So they could have been staring down a 6-1 defeat here. Yeah. They lost 4-1. It's a comprehensive defeat. The goal they scored was a consolation.
Totally.
Are Newcastle fans, are Newcastle as a team and a club really going to be under more pressure than they are at the moment if he plays Lewis Hall instead?
Yeah.
Because Newcastle fans, every fan likes a young youth team player come through anyway. They'll give him support. They'll give him patience. They'll say, do you know what? He's been roasted there by Sun all game, but he'll learn from that.
Well, they've committed to pay the thick end of $30 million for him next year. So they clearly rate him. I just don't understand it.
No, I don't either. And I think that suddenly the players are very self-conscious of some poor performances, and they know themselves that their energy levels are low. And it's like, you know...
Well, I think
how much of it. I mean, do you basically say to them after that game, right, lads? I'll see you at the ground now before kickoff of that Milan game. You know, you've got to give them a break. You know, and it disrupts the plans. And I'm a bit concerned for them. But Tottenham Hotspur though, back on the wagon with a big victory, and nice to see Richarlison scoring
with his feet.
I was just going to talk about Spurs more generally. They were good because they had Sarr and Bissouma in there, who were providing an amazing base to their midfield. They could put a team out which would do the job. Obviously, they've got their own injury problems themselves, but they're able to really be less tired than Newcastle, and obviously don't have any kind of European concerns, so they haven't played quite as many games. I thought that the performance of Christian Romero is like continually baffling. Like, he's just come back from a ban where he's tried to do someone right. And here's the thing, and this is the football fans all over. You know, the outcry about Matty Cash's behaviour doing Bentancur and putting him out again after he'd done Ben Davis before that, and people talk about Charlie Adam doing Gareth Bale. Right, shut your mouth if you've got Christian Romero in your team. because Christian Romero, as far as I'm concerned, is a brilliant player. I've never seen I've never seen such a good player be so brain dead. He's worse than Sergio Ramos.
Like, do you know what?
He's honestly worse than Ramos.
But Ramos was... Yeah, okay, carry on the point. The point is
against Chelsea, in my view, he tries to do him. Again there, against Newcastle, I just think he gets the red mist and he can't help himself.
It is a strange one.
And the reason I say that he's brain dead, and I know it sounds a bit disrespectful, is because you have to have something missing in your mind if you come back from a ban having done that and then do that again.
It's like goldfish memory, isn't it?
It's blind spots he's got there, isn't it? I mean, it,
and he should have walked for that, by the way.
Yeah, he should. And I think it's interesting because the way they've constructed the defence this season, obviously Van de Ven is out at the moment, but the idea, it seems, is Van de Ven's quick, he'll cover for the bits where Romero dives in. But if he dives in to the extent where he's going to get himself sent off. I mean, you know, there's no covering defender who can sort that out for
I think that's it. That if there is a ball in behind Romero, Van de Ven, he has to be incredibly quick to make sure that Romero's not the last man.
Yeah.
That is clearly
I also think there's a bit of a category error there. You know, it's not uncommon, as we all know, for two centre-backs, one to drop and one to go and attack the ball and all the rest of it. And him and Van de Ven do that broadly very well, and it's very complimentary. I don't think that's what we're talking about here. I think there are plenty of good centre-backs out there who go out and win the ball and make the right decision, et cetera, et cetera. And of course you mistime it sometimes. Of course you commit the occasional tactical foul.
It feels like he doesn't want to control himself, doesn't it?
He doesn't want to, and he's going to hurt someone. He's basically just going to hurt someone. And I don't think it's the right message for Chris Kavanagh and the rest of the officials, whoever they were in VAR, to not send him off for that yesterday. I thought it was brutal. I thought there's no place for it in the modern game. And given his track record, you can't give him the benefit of the doubt.
But I tell you something, though, speaking of Spurs defenders, as Michael Richards highlighted quite nicely on Match of the Day too, Porro and Udogie, where the way that they're just all over the place.
Yeah.
It's very difficult to defend against that. Now,
you mean all over the place in a good way, though?
In a very, tactically
everywhere.
Weaving in and out and picking up, going in different positions and so on. And I think that, you know, it's been highlighted. Obviously, opposition managers will be aware of this. I think they're going to have to be very aware of it, and they're going to have to do something about it. Because, you know, if you can catch them out, then there are spaces at the back.
Yeah.
And you know, so there is something there. And I think that, you know, that's the way Postecoglou likes to play, is like get everybody forward, and that's what they're committed to doing. And it has been very effective and very enjoyable to watch. You know, Spurs are up in fifth now. They're just 3 points off a Champions League spot, 7 points off the top, despite that, you know, four losses in the last six games that they've had. But it is great to see just the freedom that some of those players have, and the fans are loving it. And as I say, they're back on the wagon.
It is important. It's an important win for them. You look at the games they've got coming up: Forest away, Everton at home, Brighton away, and then on New Year's Eve they play Bournemouth at home.
Yeah.
But it was one of those. I think it's a real pivotal game for them, because Newcastle are a good team when they're fully fit and firing. And if they had lost that one as well, you start to go, well, where's the next win coming from?
Yeah.
And now you feel like they've got a bit of confidence back in there.
Yeah. Let's talk about Fulham 5.
You weren't listening to any of that, were
you? Hey.
Yeah.
Here we go. It's happening.
What? It just goes to show.
We've got liftoff, ladies and gentlemen.
The quality of your analysis is right up there.
So when after 12 games, Fulham had only scored 10 goals.
And you were really worried.
And I said Fulham need to score goals. And Marco Silva, clearly listening to
pumped
this podcast,
into the dressing room,
went, come on, let's not let him down.
Yeah.
And my goodness, 16 goals in their last four games, picked up 9 points. It's been it's been scintillating.
And we talked, didn't we, on Friday about West Ham's defence being an accident waiting to happen.
Yeah,
and certainly. That and Fulham being on fire at the moment, I mean, was the combination of those two factors, well, wasn't it?
The performance against Forest was very good, but Forest are a bit down on their luck at the moment. Whereas West Ham, you know, Marco Silva said this was a more complete performance. Fulham, of course, have won 5-0 at home for the second time in a row, and it's the first time since October 1961 that they've scored 3+ goals in successive top-flight league matches. That's what's going on here, everybody.
It was five different goal scorers and five different assist makers as well.
Yeah,
that's a complete performance.
Spread it.
I reckon what Marco Silva said is he said, listen, we need to get our goal difference back up to zero as soon as possible. And now they've done it.
it's been so, so good. And I said earlier in the season that I think a lot of people like Raul Jimenez. I get that impression that he's quite a liked player, certainly among the Fulham fans. But I think he's quite likable.
I would agree.
I think people wished him goodwill, especially after a bad injury.
It's really satisfying to see him getting back to some sort of form. Because at one point, remember, when he was at Wolves, he was being linked with Juventus and all sorts of massive clubs.
You're absolutely right.
It's not long ago. It seems like a long time ago because it's been a really dry spell for him. But all of a sudden, he's old Raul, and it's great.
Well, he is. It's funny because I think it's almost as if Fulham have accepted that Mitrovic has gone, and it's like, right, we're playing with him up front.
Did you hear Marco Silva talking about it afterwards?
Yes.
He's like, you know, you win 5-0 two games in a row and people are still asking you about Mitrovic. And I was like, no, that's just Speller.
That's just me.
Yeah.
I think, you know, Silva said it right, you know, confidence breeds confidence. You know, Raul Jimenez gets his first goal of the season, which was a tap-in, which was a consolation, you know, ultimately. But suddenly he's got a goal, and then, you know, gets a couple against Forest, and he's buzzing. You saw against Forest the way he took the first one, beautiful finish, smashed into the river net, and then the second one.
Yeah, this is proper I'm king of the world kind of finishing,
goodness,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, the one he scored against West Ham was exactly the kind of goal you want him to score.
Yeah, yeah. That just sort of whipped ball in beauty, and then lovely flick. Willian's chipping in. Lovely to have Tosin Adarabioyo back in the side. You know, a good centre half, a mainstay in the side. He had bad injuries. He was linked to, I think it was Monaco, if my memory serves me
well. Came through at City, didn't he?
He did come through City. Yeah, I think he's from that part of the world. Mm. And now he's back in the side, which they needed, because Tim Ream has been a fine, fine player for Fulham over the years. And I still think that he's a good defender, despite being a little bit older. But when you're relying on him every single week in the you know, the harsh and tough surroundings of the Premier League, the odd mistake has crept in this season.
And also, Calvin Bassey, who started out had quite a difficult start just from the career, now starting to hit his straps as well.
Yeah, and you saw, and I mean, him and Adarabio, when he scored, when Tosin scores that goal, that you can see that there must be a friendship there or something. He looked delighted for him, and the partnership there that could blossom, you know, at the back would be very, very
also
important.
Like Harry Wilson coming on and being that good. Did he come on at half time? Would you start half time?
I think it was half time.
Yeah, he was. He was Susan Purb.
Yeah,
he was sensational.
He's a lovely player, Harry Wilson.
He almost scored one of the goals of the season with that flick around the corner.
And
the keeper saves it.
And you saw him when he had his head in his hands. He was like,
it was actually quite a poor finish.
He was like, what have I done?
Yeah.
What have I done?
Don't worry, I'll sort it.
Made up for it.
Yeah, he
did make up for it, though. And it was lovely to see Captain Tom Kearney in the centre of the pitch for the whole game.
And he started.
Proving that he is the best number 10 in the Premier League.
He's now. Well.
Then let me have it. Come on.
It's a big thing to let you have.
Oi, player of the December player of the month is off the grabs.
That's like you walking into my house on Christmas Day, grabbing the PS5 and go, let me have it. I'll let you have one of the smaller presents. It's fine. You're not having that.
He's a good Premier League operator.
Better.
Okay.
I think he's starting to show now. Mm. He's starting to show that he can do it in an effective way at this level and not just be a cameo, a kind of throw of the dice.
Yes.
He's got a great left foot with 1-0 down with 15 minutes left. Can he do something from a free kick type thing? Mm. He's now starting to show he can do stuff.
Yeah, right.
Against a West Ham team, fine. They're away from home, fine. They've got this performance in them, as Andy's already said, which I agree with. But to keep, I'm not just talking about Kearney here, I'm talking about Fulham overall, to keep... You know, players like Pakatar, Kudos, Fornals, all of whom were substituted off.
Yeah.
Quiet when they've already, and Bowen as well, keeping him off the score sheet. One thing I was absolutely baffled to see was that Opta gave Bernd Leno man of the match.
Yeah. Yeah.
Isn't that right? Yeah. He made some saves, fine. But I mean, really, they won 5-0. They've got all sorts of players to choose from here. It was strange they picked him.
Leno's been brilliant for them. I've said it before and I'll say it again. You know,
he's a great goalkeeper. Yeah.
And we should also say another former Arsenal man, Alex Iwobi, has been very good for Fulham since he's gone there. 4 goals and assists in his last four matches for Fulham. Yeah. Like, he really has provided something in the midfield. Mm. I know that at Arsenal, he was a player and he was sort of a younger hopeful and had some moments in an Arsenal shirt and whatnot, but obviously didn't quite work out, hence he moved to Everton. And Everton, you know, it's been a bit of a funny time for that club, let's be honest, but he's coming at Fulham and he's been really good. A lot of energy, a lot of movement, some ideas, you know, some goals and whatnot. But I think he's brought something that Fulham are maybe lacking a little bit. He's had takes a lot of shots at goal, which, you know, you're going to score at some point, aren't you? And he's been a part of this these recent big results, of course. So yeah, it's looking so much more rosier for Fulham, and it has just clicked. I think that's the thing. I know you take out Mitrovic, and that's a huge loss, but that's gone. That's a long time ago now.
But you need some statement wins to get past that, because I think if you're with all due respect, bottom half of the table type team, when you take the goal scorer out, you look what's happening to Forest at the moment with no Awoniyi.
Yeah.
You know, that is, I think, what most sort of mid-table, bottom half of the table teams are sort of scared of, losing your guy who guarantees you 15 goals a season.
And what this does is it now puts to bed all the Mitrovic chat, which I promise I will now. But the reason why it was so stark, it was just so obvious that was what they were missing. Mm. Well, now that's not the case, and I'm sure Mitro will be back one day.
Yeah, little walk around the pitch.
Yeah, did you see hashtag Moyes out was trending on X at full time?
What was X formerly known as?
Twitter.
Yeah. when people say this stuff, is it because they don't understand how it works, how the trends now are tailored towards what you're looking for?
Maybe.
So that doesn't mean, as far as I know, that doesn't mean that a massive amount of people are calling for it. It just means that a few people are, and it's been engaged with a lot because it's controversial, and that's a fucking idiotic thing to say in this case, and therefore people see it. That's how I understand
it. You having a dig at the Musketeers' algorithms?
I'm having a go at the producers for putting this in.
Well, let us move on then.
And I'll tell you why, because in no other part of this running order and is anyone else mentioned, apart from when it comes, like you say, very fairly there, Alex Iwobi has now registered 4 goals and assists in his last 4 matches for Fulham.
Yeah.
What the running order actually says is, having previously been criticised by Luke, Alex Iwobi has now registered 4 goals and assists in his previous 4 games. Mm. I'm not seeing anything about Andy or Marcus getting anything wrong. So I'm just saying, if they're going to give it some, I'm going to give it a bit back.
Right, I see.
And young people should know how social media works.
That's how professional.
That's why they're here.
That's how professional Luke is. He will drag it back and have a go at the producers of this show. Sheffield United 1-0. Chris Wilder said, "You have to enjoy days like today."
He's like a pig in shit. He's got his old job back.
Yes, yeah.
They come crawling back. He's gone back in there with Nelson the dog.
Yep.
And they've given him his job back.
It's only their second win of the season, of course, in their second game under that man.
And the first one was against Liverpool, to be fair.
Which the first game. Yeah.
And if he was going back in with Nelson the dog, it's like he went back in with Nelson the dog and stopped the Swindon merger.
Yes, it is.
That's what it's like.
It's like remarkable. David Brent. It's like David Brent getting his job back and stopping Neil doing his thing.
Because this was a Sheffield United performance from a couple of seasons ago. It was very retro.
Paul Heckingbottom is Neil in this scenario.
Mm.
Right.
Who's Nelson the dog?
I'm not going to say.
Is it McAtee?
I'm not going to say.
Well, listen, I there are pundits out there on shows today who are going to say that McAtee didn't mean that.
Who's going to say that?
They are. That some people out there are going to go, that was a whipped cross to the far post that went in the top corner.
No, it wasn't.
Having seen what Sheffield United have been through this season so far, having seen that, I think that's his is that his first ever Premier League goal? I think
he is. Yeah, scored in the Champo quite consistently.
I think you'd be very, very mean and very unkind, particularly this time of year, to deny James McAtee that goal as a meant goal. I just think there's going to be people out there who think it's a cross.
Can I tell you who is mean and unkind? Mark Flecken, for not putting in more of a dive that would have made it a stone cold goal of the month contender, and from stopping Sheffield United sewing it up in the second half.
But
I think that's fair.
I think
Harry Wilson's is the goal of the month, by the way.
It's a beauty. It is an absolute beauty.
It wouldn't have been if Mark Flecken was in goal. And everyone would have dived for it.
Every fibre of my being wants to deny you that. Yeah. But I don't know if I can at this point.
Why would you want that?
Can I just say as well, in the Brentford goal, not having a dive.
The Sheffield United goal.
Yeah. Well, he's obviously the goalkeeper's in the Brentford goal. That's why I said that.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. There is something of there is a beauty in the goalkeeper not diving because there's an element of, well, what do you want to do with that? Mm. Which makes it better.
Yeah.
Now, aesthetically, aesthetically, it's not better, but philosophically, it's arguably stronger because the goalkeeper's looked at that and gone, I am a top level goalkeeper. Mm. I'm getting nowhere near that. I'm staying home.
It was like that Galatasaray free kick goal against Man United.
Exactly like that.
And Arna was like, nah.
Not as impressive as Onana. He misses quite a lot of them. But yeah.
Top level goalkeeper.
Yeah. I don't think Onana is at Man United at least has earned the right to decide himself whether he dives for goals or not.
Well,
is it deciding if you're off balance?
Maybe. Yeah. Did you think that Frank Onyeka should have been sent off for Brentford?
Yeah. Mike Dean did.
Interesting that. Mike Dean. Because normally the referees will 99 times out of 100.
There's no point in them being there.
Yeah, right. Whereas old Deeney.
Yeah.
The thing is, when there's a studs up challenge anywhere near the centre circle at Bramall Lane, you think of Andy Johnson and George Santos, don't you?
Massively.
Yes.
George Santos looking hard as nails, collar up.
Yeah.
Yeah, you do definitely think of that. I don't think that's what the referee was thinking. Was it Stuart Atwell? I don't think that was on his mind.
I don't think so.
I don't think he was saying, these killing fields have seen worse violence in the past. I'll turn a blind eye.
There are two types of people in life. The people who think of that George Santos moment all the time and bring it up like the protagonist in The Ancient Mariner, and those who've like blocked it out of their minds because it's just too horrific.
Too brutal,
I can't remember it, if I'm honest.
It's
Yeah, you're one of the second type of people.
I must have been traumatised by it.
George Santos basically sets out to do him and has obviously been planning it way before the game started because that's some previous earlier in the season, right? And then he just walks off of that question.
Was it worse than that elbow that Sean Bean gets on when Saturday comes and Sheffield United kit?
That's the gold standard for Sheffield United violence.
Did it
right
make
there.
That noise?
Yeah. But I tell you what, though, I mean, not to end this on a negative note for Sheffield United after they've got their second win of the season in the Premier League, it's going to be a case of, I think there's going to be a bit of hope that's going to kill them now. I think under Heckingbottom, it was like,
we're
resigned to this.
I don't know. I think Wilder, I think they've got a fighting chance. I still think they'll go down, but I think he'll give them a fighting chance.
What gives them a fighting chance?
Chris Wilder. And Sean Bean.
Here's something.
I don't think we mention enough on this show.
Sean Bean.
Yeah.
Bastard. I think. Here's one for you. Here's one we could all get behind, okay? Sheffield United are going to Stamford Bridge next.
Oh, now you're talking.
And I've kept pretty quiet up till now.
That is it. They're going to win 1-0. You know they are.
Yeah.
They know they are. My goodness. Did you see, speaking of Sean Bean, that some Sheffield United fan photos from the 90s have recently been published? It's one of old Beanie with some Sheffield United
fans. He looks great as well.
Yeah, he's having a drink.
And by the way, if I may
Sean Bean's having a drink with Sheffield United fans.
That's an uncharacteristic.
Any decade, you'll find that.
He's not having a drink with Sheffield United fans. He's having a drink with fellow Sheffield United fans. He's a perfectly authentic Sheffield United fan himself.
Fine.
It's not like, oh, here, I'm going to get a photo with some people like they do these days.
Obviously.
It's authentic.
Yes.
You said we don't talk about him enough. I'm trying to give you some more credit.
I know, and I'm agreeing with you by saying yes.
He looks great.
If you're going to lean on 90s Sheffield United, it has to be Alan Cork and his massive grey beard. I mean, come on.
I don't even know what you're talking about,
Andy. Don't you?
Alan Cork. I'm Googling
Alan
that
Cork
right now.
And his massive grey beard.
Oh, go on then.
Yeah, that's great. He looks 100 years old. Yeah.
Yes, he does.
Oh, now I do remember that. Yeah, of course.
FA Cup semi final, Sheffield semi final.
Oh, yeah.
That's up there with your Kiel Kleins.
Yeah, it is.
You're only talking about that because Alan Cork also used to play for Wimbledon, presumably.
Yeah. obviously.
Yeah.
Such a predictable.
Bastard.
Sausage. Bastard.
Wanker.
Bastard.
Bastard. Hey, Marcus, let's just do 10 seconds of calling Andy a bastard. That's what I mean, really. Andy, bastard. Yeah. Bastard.
Oh, there's a multilingual bastard in this studio.
He just come over here from Portugal. Bastard.
It's Bruno Fernandes. Bastard.
He wants to keep Britain in the EU. Bastard.
Don't know how Bean voted, so don't be naughty.
I don't know how he voted, but I know how Andy voted. Part of the woke lefty mob, isn't he?
Although he surprised us with that one.
Yeah.
Gentlemen, shall we end the show with a story from Northampton Town?
Yeah, why not?
A place where we've played live.
There's no time at present. We have played Northampton live, actually. Yeah.
Roadmenders?
Was it the Roadmenders? I don't think it was.
No, it was the big one where they had the Proms there, I think, once.
Yeah, no one came.
They supported us.
It's a big venue.
Yeah. But anyway, the Northampton Town DJ was forced to apologise for playing Last Christmas by Wham at their home game against Portsmouth at the weekend. What was the score, Luke?
Pomp 1-3-0, mate.
They're reversing up the behind.
It's just what they do. Back unless you're playing Blackpool, famously. Yeah. They get whooped at home.
The DJ was criticised for potentially knocking people out of the game Whamageddon, which is a game where players... and we're all players in it, try to avoid hearing Last Christmas for as long as possible before Christmas
Eve. I had no idea about this.
Yeah, I am aware of
the Facebook thing.
Look, it's a bit wanky, let's be honest, let's declare that.
A bit wanky.
Indeed. Yeah. The greatest piece of graffiti, of course, that time the late, great George Michael crashed his car into...
Snappy Snaps.
Snappy Snaps in Hampstead.
Yeah, and someone wrote on the wall, Wham.
Yeah.
Makes you proud to be from this country, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But, so Whamageddon is...
Were you aware of this game?
Yes.
So if I've
and
got
a lot of people are, apparently, because people were pissed off that the DJ there has knocked them all out.
So people try and go as long as they can without hearing it, and then basically it's some kind of self-policing thing where you just admit it if you've heard it, and that's you're out.
If you hear it, what happens is, you remember the end of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade?
Yeah.
That's what happens to you.
Right. Yeah. It seems like, what do you get about it if you don't hear it?
You just carry on as normal. Yeah, it's Whamageddon.
Last bastard Christmas.
No, I think you do. It's a self-policing game.
Yeah.
Which is why I win every year.
Yeah.
I was for some reason, actually, this year, I heard Wham Last Christmas in late November, and I remember thinking, oh, I've been done. But it doesn't start until the 1st of December. So I'm still in, baby.
Ah, brilliant.
I'm still in.
I'm still in as well, but I didn't know I was even playing.
Well, don't play it out now, because that would be naughty and also copyright.
Yeah, we can't play live music on the show. So people listen to this. If you're playing, you're perfectly safe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we wouldn't do that to you. Yeah, but some people are into it. Some people are not bothered, Andy. I would suggest that was probably most people, and perhaps even a bigger majority of people don't even know about
it. But the Northampton Town DJ, we must emphasise, did this on purpose because he thought it would be fun to knock out 7,000 people at once.
Yeah, maybe as he played the track, he put in some noise cancelling headphones in, and he was like, "I'm still in, baby," and he's going to take the Northampton title.
And DJ Matty. Matt Facer, his real name is, to name and shame him. He said, I gave it a spin thinking it would be quite funny to wipe out 7,000 people who couldn't avoid it. But clearly it isn't funny.
Yeah.
I've been insulted on Twitter saying it was not a nice thing to do. So I officially apologise to everybody whose Christmas I've ruined.
Yeah,
but you're still out and I'm still in.
Yeah.
No, he's not in. He's played it.
He had the earplugs in, remember?
True. The most confusing quote from the whole story is him saying, I think it's a shame people in professions like mine can't play Wham until late December, but it's a game and we all have to jump on board. he's fully into it. It's absolute life and death stuff for him.
Yeah, that's right. My goodness, anyway.
Do you know who I like? Do you know who I feel sorry for in all this? Andrew Ridgely.
Yeah.
Well, he needs people to be consuming his fucking stuff. He doesn't want people to be avoiding it, does he?
No,
he wants people streaming it.
Yeah, that's true.
You get 0.00001p per stream on Spotify.
I think the Ridge is doing absolutely fine.
The Ridge.
Thank you very much for listening to The Football Ramble, everybody, part of the Acast Creator Network. Do follow us on X, formerly known as Twitter, TikTok, Instagram and YouTube at Football Ramble. And don't forget to subscribe on your podcast app. Thank you, Andy Brass.
Obrigado.
Thank you, Lukey Moore.
Bastard.
We'll see you soon, you bastards.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel. A pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.